This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan
Show! Hello, it's Holly Hamilton here in for Stephen this week. And on The Nolan Show today, we had the Justice Minister giving us her reaction to what were racist comments on a recruitment post from the Chief Constable's social media page on Twitter or X. Naomi Long condemned the reaction. She did say it was unsurprising. We also spoke to a PSNI officer, Andy George, who's also the president of the National Black Police Association in the UK. He gave us his reaction to those comments and also told us about the need to recruit more officers from ethnic minority communities. And also on the show, well, it dominated the show in the end, the latest from the Met Office. A red wind warning has now been issued for Northern Ireland ahead of Storm Éowyn. So the entire island of Ireland now is under a red warning for the first time ever. The Met Office has said that there is a danger to life. So that warning will be in effect from 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. That goes on until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So we can expect things like flying debris that will, of course, could result in danger to life. Large waves and beach material being thrown onto coastal roads, seafronts and homes. That's according to the Met Office. And obviously very dangerous driving conditions. We're talking about things like fallen trees and branches on roads. We could be looking at power cuts, which would affect other services such as mobile phone coverage. So we are saying, please really take care of yourselves. It's really important to check travel conditions. If you do have to travel, the advice is to stay at home if you can. Check for public transport cancellations as well as school closures, which may come into effect. Thanks for listening. Keep across all of that on the BBC News website, of course, and on the Met Office website as well. We are back tomorrow from 9 o'clock. In the meantime, it's Nolan at bbc.co.uk. Have a great day. The Stephen Nolan Show! Hello, a very good morning to you. It's Holly Hamilton here with you until 10:30 this morning. Welcome to The Nolan Show. I have to say, I'm very glad I decided not to go ahead with the bouncy castle for the child's birthday this weekend, by all reports. We will, of course, be talking about Storm Éowyn today. There's a red warning in place in the Republic. There's an amber one here. Let us know your concerns. 030 30 80 55 55. We'll bring you full analysis and forecasts on that. But first, this morning, now you may have heard us yesterday talking about a recruitment drive within the PSNI. But unfortunately, the head of the Black Police Association has had to speak out following racist attacks hacking that recruitment poster online. So the recruitment ad was published on the Office of the Chief Constable's account on X or Twitter as John Boucher announced plans to recruit more officers. Figures show the number of officers in the PSNI is at an all-time low, but within minutes of that advert being published, dozens of online posts questioned why it featured a black woman. Well, just a few moments ago, Justice Minister Naomi Long gave us her reaction.
I mean, I think it's absolutely appalling. I mean, yesterday was a good news day for the PSNI. We're launching that recruitment campaign. We're going to see the PSNI gradually restored to the kind of numbers that it needed to be. And that should be good news. It's good news in terms of increasing diversity and increasing representation in the PSNI. And I think that the reaction on Twitter, not surprisingly, I have to say, has been absolutely appalling and disgraceful.
It's slightly depressing when you say it's not surprising, that it's almost assumed that this would be the reaction. And a lot of those people, not all of them, of course, but a lot of them are from Northern Ireland.
Well, I think the problem actually isn't Northern Ireland. The problem is Twitter. And I have said this many times, X as it now is called, has become really an absolute wild place to be. It is abusive almost exclusively. There is very little real engagement on that platform. And I think we can trace that back to the owner, who did away with any kind of fact checking, any kind of protective mechanisms for people online, and any kind of complaints mechanism when issues like this arise. And the platform has become a sewer.
And I'm sure it is frustrating, but as the Justice Minister, is there anything to be done? Is there anything to protect the people of Northern Ireland, particularly those from ethnic communities?
Well, I think there are things we can do in real life to do that. I mean, telecoms are obviously a reserve matter, but it's something that I was actually speaking to the Home Secretary about yesterday in terms of racism, hate crime, and the kind of priorities we have around misogyny and violence against women and girls. But it's also, I have to say, something we need to respond to in real life, because many of these comments, if they can be traced, and of course that's the challenge, but if they can be traced, many of them would be a breach of the law as it stands, and many of them may be in contravention, for example, of the Communications Act. So there are things that can be done. The difficulty, of course, is that when you're dealing with online abuse, it is incredibly difficult to trace the owners of accounts. And that's one of the issues I raised around the online safety bill, was that actually we needed to have traceability so that ownership of accounts was clear. I don't care what people call themselves online, what their handle is. It doesn't matter to me. But it does matter that if people are committing crime online, that we're able to trace those accounts.
And they are committing a crime online, so should the police be investigating this here?
Well, I think the police will investigate, but you have to be realistic about the likelihood of them getting any cooperation in that investigation from some of the social media platforms. I mean, to me, it's actually got worse in the last week. We've had Facebook suggesting that they're going to remove many of the protections that they have in place for their users. And I think more and more we're going to have to start voting with our feet as a community and say that we don't want to be on platforms that are unregulated. We don't want to be on platforms where abuse is normalised. And we don't want to have people who are working in our police service abused and denigrated simply because of the colour of their skin or their religion or their gender.
Particularly with an organisation like the PSNI, and there is a need to recruit those from ethnic minorities, despite what those comments say on X. We're going to have the president of the National Black Police Association in the UK, Andy George, speaking to us in just a moment. And I'm sure you saw his comments. He says it highlights the issues facing officers and staff from ethnic minority backgrounds in Northern Ireland. I mean, how can you reassure those from ethnic minorities in Northern Ireland that something is being done to address this?
Well, I have met with Andy many times. I've spoken with John Boucher because I'm aware of the concerns that they have. It's a genuine concern that, as unfortunately, given that the police are often placed in confrontational situations, that will often find that their gender, their appearance, and potentially their sexual orientation or their race are used to abuse them. But that doesn't make it okay, and we need to be clear about that. Where that abuse occurs, it needs to be prosecuted, and that's something that John Boucher has been absolutely clear about. The people racially abuse or in other ways abuse police officers, that will be prosecuted as a crime, irrespective of the context, and I think that is right that happens. I also think it's important that we as a community support those officers who step forward, irrespective of what part of the community an officer comes from. They deserve the respect of the community and the cooperation of the community, because they are there to serve the public and to keep us safe. And the fact that even on an advertisement to try and increase diversity within the PSNI through this recruitment campaign, we're seeing this kind of backlash. The PSNI, if it is to be acceptable right across the community and provide reassurance, has got to reflect the population it serves. And that's an increasingly diverse population.
And with that in mind, to prosecute and to get justice, you need the police officers. That's what this entire recruitment campaign is about, and the Chief Constable also made it clear he has a target of 7,000 officers now. Is that realistic? Is he going to get it? What are you going to do to assist him?
Well, we've already been working on that. There's a business case in preparation where my officials are working with him in order to get that business case into a position where we can give that to the Department of Finance and make progress. We've done the calculations in terms of the capacity of the training college. It's about 500 officers a year at full tilt. When you look at 350 roughly leaving a year, then you've got issues in terms of only being able to add 150 a year. But I think we can find the resources within the executive. We've said keeping people safe and speeding up justice are priorities. We need to put our money where our mouth is on that. And we need to get the police gradually up to that place, because we also need to recognise that the work we've done since I came in to office has been to stop the attrition, to stop the reduction in numbers. And that's part of this campaign that's been launched. But we need to get beyond that stabilisation phase and now move into a phase where we're talking about rebuilding.
It feels a bit like the Chief Constable's had to go ahead and do this himself. He started this recruitment drive without actually getting the funding approved.
Well, no, he hasn't. He had to get approval to launch a recruitment drive, in the sense that he has to prove that it is affordable. And I was able to get an extra just under 40 million in the October monitoring round, which meant that the PSNI is not carrying any overspend this year, and that put him in a position where he's now able to go out and recruit. So there's been collaboration on this the whole way through. We're not at odds on this. We want to see the PSNI in a more sustainable footing, because bear in mind, many of the 350 officers who leave every year will do so as a result of stress or injury or ill health, and that's contributed to by the fact that they often don't get their rest days or leave. And so if we can build the numbers coming in, then we can also save the numbers going out.
We will have to leave it there. Naomi Long, thank you very much for your time on this. Yeah, that was Naomi Long speaking to me just shortly before we came on air this morning. And it's interesting, you know, when you look at the recruitment drive, there's not just one poster. There are many posters featuring all different men, women. As I say, the one we've mentioned there is just one poster that's available out there on social media. Listening to that is PSNI officer Andy George, who is the president of the National Black Police Association in the UK. Good morning to you, Andy.
Good morning.
Andy, I saw your tweet last night and I thought, what was going through your mind when you read those comments? And as I say, there's nearly 80 comments there, and nearly 100% of them questioning why there'd be a black woman on that poster. A lot of them just downright racist. What was your reaction?
I think the reaction was pretty much what the Justice Minister was saying. Real disappointment from our end, from our membership, the officers and staff within the Police Service of Northern Ireland who come from ethnic minority backgrounds that had to watch that. For those that were thinking about joining the Police Service in the current recruitment campaign, what we've seen was a really positive day turning into something that, again, causes division, which has the potential to stop us being the police service that we need to be, that reflects, that understands and reacts to community concerns across the board for all sections of society in Northern Ireland.
And as you reflected in your post, there is a need to recruit those from ethnic minority backgrounds. The workforce within the PSNI is not 0.7% compared to 8.1% of the population in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, like it's something that just hasn't been looked at in the same way as other parts of Great Britain. The racial element, not 0.7%, you know, to compare to 8.1%, you're chatting about 15 times underrepresented. So as the president of the National Black Police Association across all of the United Kingdom, you know, we are the most underrepresented police service for ethnic minorities in all of the other police services that I work in. That's a damning fact for me as an officer who has just done 25 years and that's proud to be a police officer, that wants more people to come in, you know, and that wants to make sure that we can reach out. Remember, if you're from a visible ethnic minority, for myself, that you can see that straight away. Somebody's community background, their sexual orientation and other factors aren't always visible, but your ethnicity is. It's something that can be seen straight away. And, you know, the trust and confidence that an officer of colour standing in uniform can do for ethnic minority communities is second to none. And we did a podcast along with the Strategic Community Engagement Team back during Eid. And there was one of the females there, she said she'd seen a black officer in Belfast and she actually stopped her car on the opposite side of the road and started to wave at him. That's how much it meant to her, because she didn't see somebody that looks like her. That created a connection to the police service. It meant that she thought that there was people within the police service that understood her lived experiences and that she could maybe come forward with some of the issues that she might have.
And that is why diversity is so important. And you mentioned there, it's not looked at the way it is in the rest of the UK here in Northern Ireland. What effect has that had?
Yeah, for me, what gets measured gets done. And I would never say that the Police Service of Northern Ireland and the current Chief Constable does not have a desire to make the police service more representative of all communities. But if it isn't within the Police Act, you know, what we had 25 years ago with the Northern Ireland Policing Board and all of the transformation that policing come through, and I chat about that when I speak nationally and internationally, you know, some of the things are world leading that we have in community participation, scrutiny and oversight, but there is nothing in there to put an onus on the police service for ethnic minorities. And that's, you know, we were dealing with a specific issue in Northern Ireland with our troubled history. But in 2001, the population of Northern Ireland was not 0.8%, 1.8% in 2011, and now 8.1%. For me, Northern Ireland's changing. The needs of the community are changing. And the police service, the Northern Ireland Policing Board and everywhere else needs to evolve, needs to move with that as well. For me, we have advocated for a long time about an update to the Northern Ireland Policing Board. There is nothing within that, even within the police and community safety partnerships, that places a statutory onus on the police service to engage ethnic minority communities.
It's interesting. A lot of the comments, when you read them, and there is a lot of ignorance, and a lot of the information that you're giving us here, and a lot of the statistics, you know, the idea that how much the population has increased, those from ethnic minority backgrounds, there is a lack of education, it would seem. What can be done to fix that?
There's definitely a lack of education. You know, I think there's, you know, all of the misinformation, the stereotypes, everything that's put in on social media, on the internet, and in media as well. There are no real positive role models a lot of the time. People's only connection to people that look like me in the communities that I come from, they're getting that negative hit them all the time. And what I found with my experiences of racism, having been born and grew up in Northern Ireland, whenever people see me first, they see the difference. But as they get to know me over time, there's this shift where they start to see the similarities. And I think the overarching message I would say to everybody is that there is more that binds us together. There is more that unites us. And there is more things that we have similar to each other than what there is that divides us, that there is keeps us apart. But I think along with the education, there's a real need for us to have proper, robust legislation in Northern Ireland to tackle hate crimes. The protections that officers and staff that I represent in England and Wales is different and is more robust than what we have here. And officers in uniform, of colour, in custody suites and other private spaces can be racially abused. And there's very little that they can do. There's very little action they can take. Now, you imagine somebody that gets away with racially abusing an officer in uniform. How does that empower them to go out and tackle more vulnerable members of the community? So I would say we need that legislation. We need an ability to come back on people that want to commit racism. And we've seen in August that the dire consequences of where it goes when we get race relations wrong. So I think there's a big bit around that. I would agree with the Justice Minister around the online safety bill and some of the things that we have to do. You know, it was chatted about that Twitter and X and all of the other social media accounts should be the digital town square where people can express free speech. What I would say is you can't stand in the real town square with a mask on, hiding your identity and shouting abuse at people walking past. We created laws to stop that. And I think if people knew that they could be traced, it would make them think twice about what they may or may not say. So I think there's a real need to tackle the online space as well. But the legislation across the board is greatly needed in Northern Ireland to protect people.
Andy, just when you mentioned the abuse as a black police officer in Northern Ireland, how often is that happening to you? How often are those from ethnic minorities within the PSNI experiencing racial abuse from members of the public?
Yeah, I mean, like those from visible ethnic minorities, those with accents from other countries who aren't as visible, they do get abuse, and we have had to step in and support members of the Ethnic Minority Police Association in Northern Ireland that have had that. What I will say is our colleagues want to do more, but their hands are tied with the legislation. The Chief Constable even came and spoke to some of the members around some of the abuse that they were suffering, but it does have a profound impact whenever you are really being told through that racist abuse, where are you from, where are you really from, you know, being called the N-word, the P-word, things like that. It has a profound impact that you do not have a place in this society, even though a lot of us have actually been born here. We call it home. You know, I don't know where else to go. I don't know where else or what else I can do. I see myself very much as Northern Irish. I just happen to have more pigment in my skin. But it does have a profound impact. It adds to all of the other daily stresses that police officers face, you know, all of the traumatic incidents, all of the other demands that are placed on us. We have to also carry that along with the racist abuse and the things that we get that are specific to our demographic.
Stay with us, Andy. We're getting a lot of calls on this. Let's speak to Stephen, who's in Antrim. Good morning, Stephen.
Hi, good morning, Holly.
You saw the post.
Oh, I did after it cropped up actually on my feed yesterday, and I had been listening to the discussion yesterday morning, which I thought was an interesting one about increasing the numbers and the resources for policing, and I thought this was very strange. But
what was strange?
Well, I thought that the choice, you see, what I was calling for is to get some actual figures in the numbers of the ethnic diversity police officers that we have.
I'll let Andy, I'll let you go. I think I did read out some figures earlier, but Andy, if you want to address this with Stephen.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, the actual figures are not 0.7% of the workforce. That's around about 41 officers from ethnic minority backgrounds and 6,300. Yeah. When I joined, I was one of probably 5 to 10 officers and 13,500 police back in 1999. So the numbers are really low. When you compare that to the population in the census in 2021, it's 8.1%.
Yeah, you see, I understand, Andy. You see, this is part of the shock that I saw when I looked at the ad, you know, on my screen yesterday. It was, why, given that the numbers are so low, would a decision have been made to use an image of somebody from an ethnic minority to help to aid recruitment into a police service that isn't representative of the country? It's almost as if the desire here is to virtue signal, to try and get people...
Stephen, just to make sure you're across the figures there. So what the figures state is that 8.1% of the population in Northern Ireland are from ethnic minorities, not 0.7% within the police. Doesn't it have to be reflective of the population?
Well, one would hope so. But you see, my belief has always been that employment is based on the quality of opportunity, not on a quota type of system. And I'm not discouraging. In fact, I would be an advocate for more and more ethnic minorities to apply for jobs such as in policing. But one of the things that I noticed with Andy's comments earlier on, you see, is he made comment with respect to ethnic diversity that wasn't visible. I'm very familiar with that, Holly. And there are many people who have, ethnic background that doesn't necessarily appear in the pigmentation of their skin.
Absolutely. And I appreciate, Stephen, and I'm sure you've seen it, there are other posters. There isn't just one poster that's been created here. There's, I think, at least three that I've certainly seen. So is the issue for you that there exists this one poster featuring a black woman?
Well, that was the only one that I saw, Holly, yesterday. And I thought, this is very strange. What I was hoping for, I'd actually called your program yesterday hoping to talk to you about the number of politicians that we have on the policing board. Because I think 10 politicians on a policing board, is excessive.
Stephen, you can phone. We'll have a chat about that another day,
well,
I think, because, it's an interesting conversation.
Holly,
but
that's my point.
Well, it is one for another day, I'm afraid, on that one.
Well, maybe if we get rid of some of the politicians on the policing board, we might have those additional resources going into the police service.
An interesting point. Stephen, thank you very much for your comments this morning. Let's speak to Gareth. Good morning, Gareth.
Morning, Holly. Some very interesting points from the previous caller, and it also carries on from yesterday's discussion. And I think this represents the fact that some of the things of St Andrews and Patton are now out of date. And one of those is the 50-50 policing recruitment. This is actually demonstrating that we need to have 40-40-20 recruitment, a bit like what we have for the management of integrated education. That actually allows our goals to be achieved more easily with both the old sectarian divides and also with ethnic minorities as well, Holly. And may I just say one more thing? This represents the wider situation of the St Andrews Agreement, because it is 18 years almost this year since policing and justice was devolved. Therefore, this is a teenager that is about to become an adult. And it's exactly the same with our wider political system. We now need to grow up, and we now need to move into the third stage of power sharing, and maybe even the third stage of policing and justice as well, Holly.
Gareth, thank you very much for your call on that. I want to go back to Andy now and sort of reflect again on what Stephen said and his attitude towards this poster, it was just one poster that he saw, and shocked was the word that he used.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, the comment, I think, around the desire to virtue signal, I think the desire is to highlight the gaps that we actually have in the representation in the service. As you said, I think the fact that somebody's triggered by seeing a black female in uniform probably says enough about where we are in general, that we cannot just say, yeah, the reason that that person's there is to show those from ethnic minority backgrounds that there is a place within the police service for you. We need to move forward. I mean, you could chat about those. At the minute, 41 officers at 0.7%. To get to 0.1% in parity, even to get to 4 or 5%, that's 200-300 officers from ethnic minority backgrounds policing in our communities, building relationships with those who do not always see themselves reflected in the police service. There's a saying constantly, if you see it, you can be it. And I think that's one of the key things that that message was trying to get across. And as you said, it was one of many advertisements and posters which are going out. And as I said, at 15 times underrepresented, it's probably one of the most underrepresented areas that the Police Service of Northern Ireland have at the moment, notwithstanding that there are other underrepresentations that we need to fix as well.
One thing that Naomi Long said earlier, she says that the problem isn't Northern Ireland, it's social media. What do you think?
Yeah, social media definitely plays a part. I think, you know, society, our legislation, all of the things that we have done in different eras, you know, we've had to get used to, in days gone by, the radio, then the TV, and we've had to make sure that they were regulated in some
but
way.
But isn't that the problem here? It feels like, and the Justice Minister reflected on that, that we don't seem to have any control, any power over social media, so what can we do?
I mean, look, actually, the online safety bill is one thing. I know we have engaged. I'm meeting the Policing Minister again on the 3rd of February to chat through some of these issues. We raise them at the highest levels, but as you said, the police's hands are largely tied because we cannot find and track down people that are expressing those abhorrent kind of comments and behaviours. And as I said, anonymity allows people to behave in a way that they may not if they could be tracked and traced down. So I think that's the key thing.
Do you know, and I find probably the most disturbing part of this, that a lot of them weren't. A lot of them were anonymous. They felt quite free to make those comments publicly.
Yeah, completely. And that's the anonymity gives bravery that, as I said, you may not have. There's a reason that we don't allow people to walk about with masks on.
But what I mean is they weren't. A lot of them were, you could see who they were.
But then actually tracking and tracing who they actually are. So as you said, some people, I think, were moving in an era where people do feel emboldened. There's chats about free speech and where things are. And from our perspective at times, it feels more like it's about, not about free speech and the right to say what you want, which I've always had limits. You know, you cannot stand outside a nightclub or in the street on a Saturday afternoon and completely abuse people that are walking past. You will be arrested for disorderly behaviour and for a lot of things. And again, we just have to use the same mentality that we have in the physical space on the online space. And we need to make sure that we react to all of the technological changes that we see that are coming through now.
Andy George, great to chat to you this morning. Thank you very much for coming on and making your point. That's Andy George, who is a PSNI officer and also the president of the National Black Police Association in the UK. We are going to be talking a bit about the weather now. Don't we love to talk about the weather? But it's not looking great for tomorrow, or the next couple of days, in fact. A threat to life weather warning has been issued for the whole of the Republic of Ireland as Storm Éowyn approaches. The chair of the National Emergency Coordination Group, Keith Leonard, has warned that Éowyn could be among the severest storms that Ireland has ever seen.
It's a very serious storm on Friday, probably among the severest storms that Ireland has ever seen, and we're in for really disruptive conditions across the country on Friday. Really very, very difficult conditions for everybody. Very serious disruption to transport, rail, public transport and roads in particular. And we're also going to see very significant power outages. I think the figure was 385,000 for Ophelia, and I think we're going to go above that figure on Friday, unfortunately.
Well, in Northern Ireland, the storm is expected to bring possible damage and disruption with an amber warning. That's the second highest level, which will be in place from 6 o'clock tomorrow morning until 9 o'clock tomorrow night. Let's speak to BBC NI weather presenter Barra Best. Good morning.
Hiya, good morning.
Good morning. Also on the line, we've got Met Erin's senior forecaster, Jerry Murphy. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Holly.
Now, the reason we've got both of you on, okay, is because in front of me, I've got a map, Barra. And this map, I'm sure you've seen, is from Met Erin. And the whole of the island of Ireland is basically, well, is red, except for Northern Ireland, which is amber. And I'm guessing that the weather doesn't really work through some sort of invisible border that I wasn't aware of. So what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And as Jerry will tell you as well, the issue we have on this small island at the edge of the Atlantic is that there are two different weather services providing warning updates. Met Erin in the Republic, Met Office in Northern Ireland. The difference is they both use different criteria for issuing warnings. So Met Erin would use a threshold-based system. So, for example, for a red warning to be issued, wind gusts of 130 kilometres an hour, that's 80 miles an hour, have to be in the forecast. The difference with the Met Office is those same wind gusts can be expected, but it's whether or not those wind gusts are going to have an impact in those areas where they're expected. So the Met Office kind of evaluates whether or not it's going to have a big enough impact in that area to issue a red warning. So they kind of have to look at it a little bit more. So that's where we have this discrepancy. And every time this happens, it causes uproar on social media. But essentially, that's what happens.
Yeah, because Jerry, this must make your job quite hard then, because as Barra says, it all goes over social media and it's there in black and white or red and amber as it is. And people get a little bit confused. And every time we have to explain, it's just a slightly different system. But that can be problematic, though, because then people are not quite sure how to react.
Yes, well, it can be slightly difficult in with regard to the communication of the weather event. And as Barra rightly said, the UK Met Office warning system is solely impact based. We take impacts into account as well, but there is that threshold element. So once the wind is expected to go above certain speeds, then we do issue warnings based on that while taking impacts into account as well. In terms of communication, what it means is that there are times there are differences in the way people may perceive the weather event to be, and then it's up to the likes of Barra and myself and others to then clarify specifically what is going to happen in the event. And when you take the reason for the color coding of warnings in the first place, which was started about 10-12 years ago, is simply to give people a heads up of be very aware that there's severe weather on the way and be very aware of the potential severity of that weather. So even though the colors of the two warning systems are maybe different at times, the messaging is still the same. This is a severe storm which will bring severe winds, power outages, disruption to travel, property, etc. And as with wind gusts in excess of 80 miles per hour in places. So while there are subtle differences in the systems and subtle differences in the warnings, the messaging is still the same, that Storm Eowyn is a very severe storm. So people need to be very careful with everything as we go through, really right the way through tomorrow.
Yeah, so with that in mind, Barra, I've got the Met Erin forecast in front of me and it does say danger to life. There are other things that have been put in place. I think public transport is off, schools have been closed. That's not the case here, though.
Well, I would dare say that the executive office and other statutory bodies are working at the minute behind the scenes on being prepared because, yeah, it may not be a red at the minute, but I could probably say with a degree of uncertainty there will be disruption in Northern Ireland as well. Power outages are expected. Now, one thing I should also say is the Met Office typically issue and update warnings in and around 10 or 11 o'clock each day. There is still a chance that Northern Ireland could be upgraded to red ahead of tomorrow, which would then put those statutory bodies on notice and would give the public a bit more time to plan because you don't want to travel, you won't be wanting to send kids to school and that kind of thing. So I would say stay tuned to the forecast over the next hour or two because the whole island could be under red. And Jerry can maybe answer this question for me because I can't remember off the top of my head if the entire island has ever been red at the same time. I thought Hurricane Ophelia was that time. But I'm not 100%. Maybe
Jerry, do you know?
I'm putting Jerry on the spot.
Well, No, from my memory,
really?
Ophelia was orange across Northern Ireland and red for the Republic. And as I mentioned a moment ago, like the colour coding of warrants is a relatively recent initiative, which was started. I'm not sure whether both Met offices started at the same time, but I know for Met Éireann we started around 2014. So it's there about 10, 11 years. And within that time, we had a national red for the Republic for Storm Ophelia and a very widespread red for Storm Emma, the beast from the east. And since then, we've had mainly orange level storms with red pockets, mainly along the west coast, depending on the weather event. Just to say what you mentioned there about the traffic, about various things being closed, the criteria within the Republic is that if a warning is red, then everything is cancelled. For orange warnings, it's at the discretion of, for example, schools. In an orange warning, it's at the discretion of the governing body of the school. But when it's red, they must close, if you know what I mean.
That's a really important point. I think, Barra, is that the same situation then? So if it was red here, would that mean automatic closure for schools and public transport?
I'm not 100% sure on that. It would
putting
be something
you on the spot
that I have
now,
to talk.
Yeah,
you're putting me under the spot now. I have to double check that. But I know in the past when we've had red warnings, it has led to closures of government offices, for example, people told to work at home. So it could be the case.
Because I think that's the big difference here. Because basically, sometimes with weather warnings, people just need things to close. You know, and if it's made personal choice. If it is as severe as they say it is, something has to be put in place so people can make plans, particularly if we're talking about public transport closures and schools. And we would definitely be putting a question into the executive this morning to find out if anything is likely to change. As Barra mentioned, there will be an update, we imagine, from the Met Office at around 10 o'clock. And we're going to be speaking to a senior meteorologist at the UK Met Office when they give us that warning after 10. Gerry, just before you go then, I know that you had previously said, and just to make this clear to people, I don't want to panic people at all, but I think people need to be prepared. If, say, Northern Ireland was within your remit, given the weather forecast at the minute, that would be red then, if it was in your jurisdiction?
Yes, it would be, because for much of the province, the expected wind gusts are expected to be above 130 kilometres per hour or 80 miles per hour, most especially in coastal areas. So taking it on a threshold basis as well as impacts, then it would be red. But again, I'm totally and absolutely respectful of the difference in the criteria and of the warnings that the UK Met Office issue, of course.
And Barra, before we finish this, I think just where can people get the up-to-date information? As I say, we'll bring it to you within the next hour. So where can people get advice on this, what they should do?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I'll keep you posted if I hear anything within the next hour. But also, BBC News Online, your first point to go for your information. We'll have all the latest warning details there, all the timings, etc. as well. And also what's happening in terms of travel disruption. I'm pretty sure that the ferries will be disrupted tomorrow, also flights as well. So we'll be keeping that page updated throughout today.
Yeah, and keep across BBC Radio Ulster and Radio Foyle for all the latest travel information, of course, as well. Thank you very much to both of you. Thank you to Barra Best and to Gerry Murphy, Met Éireann senior forecaster. The time is 9:43 now. There are more than 220,000 people providing unpaid care for a sick or disabled family member or friend right across Northern Ireland. That's according to Carers NI. And yesterday there was an event in Stormont marking the 60th anniversary of the charity and the launch of a booklet of carer stories illustrating the scale of challenges that carers face every single day. On the line I have Áine McGee from Carers NI. Good morning, Áine.
Good morning.
And also Wayne, who is a carer, currently caring for his son as well as his father. Good morning, Wayne.
Good morning. How are you, Holly?
I'm very well. Wayne, tell me a little bit about you. I know you've spoken to the show a few times. Tell me a bit about your life.
Well, my life basically is 24/7. I do most things as I'm gardening, getting them up for school, feeding them, dressing them, checking them. He's all right. His own personal hygiene has to be done every day. His medication has to be put out.
Tell me about your son's condition. What age is he?
My son is 14 with a mental age of 4. He's high scale autistic with severe learning difficulty. So basically, you have a lovely 14-year-old boy in a 4-year-old body, or whatever way you want to look at it, nine of a 4-year. And he's just the salt of the earth, but God love him, he just needs as much care as he can get to navigate the world. And that's all there is to it.
As you say, that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Oh, it doesn't change, Holly, yeah, it doesn't change.
How do you cope?
Never done. Times very, very difficult. I took a severe anxiety attack last year on two occasions, twice. I ended up in hospital. Sometimes it gets the better of you. No, you're saying it doesn't. It does. Life can be hard to navigate because you don't know where he's going to be or who's going to take care of him when you're not here.
Mm-hmm.
Which is your main concern because there's nothing here. You know what I mean? It's hard to describe. You know what I mean? Because people don't understand. And even if you have siblings, you can't impose them on your siblings, which I don't have. But my biggest fear is, who's going to look after my wee man when I'm not here?
I suppose that is something you think about every single day.
There's one day I thought, well, if he's gone before me, he's safe. You know what I mean?
I suppose when, as he gets older too,
yeah,
you know, he's 14 years old now.
Yeah.
That comes with its own challenges.
Well, it does come with its own challenges, yeah, it does. Like, he's hitting puberty and it's not going right and he gets aggressive and his mother usually gets the worst of it, to be fair, not me. She would have a harder task because he would be more inclined to hit her, not willingly, but he just doesn't understand and the world's hard to navigate for him, you know what I mean? You just can't. It's just autism, if you want to put it in an hour way. Like, they often say when people meet people in the street and they say, oh, I have to take my daughter to ballet, or basically, or take my children to football, they say, God, go home and take them wherever they want. We never got that. We never got Christmas, birthdays, Easter. We never got the magic that I got from my father. But never got it. You don't get it. You don't get that magic. The joy of seeing a child come downstairs from Christmas. You don't get that magic. Doesn't happen. But you just got to do the best that you can. You know what I mean? It is what it is. You know?
Wayne, it really does sound you are doing the very best that you can.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I appreciate you're also now having to look after your father.
Well, my dad's not too bad. My dad just basically begets things because he had a stroke. And
yeah.
Overall, he's not too bad. All he requires is he's getting things done, like his washing and his dinner and his medication. Like, my father, apart from that, like, he's mobile, like, but he still needs a certain amount of care. But he's my father. I love him to bits, like, you can be at, like, every hour father, he can be at pain, but it is what it is, you know what I mean? It's just life. But there's nothing there for, like, my dad, my father, goes down the street and things like that. He just forgets things and he gets anxious and, because the stroke, he swallow wouldn't be as good. And you worry about him choking and things like that. So sometimes he's just bigger than his stomach, you know. But they're things of life, you know what I mean? There's not a lot you can do about them, like, you know. He's an awful lot better than most people, like, you know. An awful lot better.
Wayne, stay with us, Wayne. And, you know, I can sit here and say, oh, look, Wayne, you're a good man. And I'm sure you've heard it all before and people who just admire you and what you do.
No,
as you say, 24 hours a day.
Unfortunately, they didn't call you that. I've been called a freeloader and a parachute.
Oh, Wayne.
Don't go there. I don't think everybody's wonderful. I've been called that. A lot of carers did that. Yeah.
Well, listening here, Anya, to that, I know that Wayne's story, his experiences, that these are not isolated. And at the end of that, to be told that Wayne is frequently told that he is a freeloader.
Well, Holly, I just want to say, first of all, thank you very much to Wayne. I just feel that he's so courageous in sharing the difficulties that he has. I mean, at Carers NI, we actually support a whole range of carers, and they come at different points in their life when they care for different people with different needs. And what we would describe Wayne is a sandwich carer, because he cares for his son, but he also cares for an elderly parent. And we're finding that in Northern Ireland to be the case more and more, because we have an ageing population. We all know that. So by 2045, you know, the age population of people over the age of 65 will have increased by 50%. So we know that that an older and a sicker population is coming our way, and we need to put the things in place to support this society to care for carers today, but also in tomorrow's world, because we know that we're definitely going to need more and more support for this society because we're getting older. And what I will say, yesterday's event was, yes, it was about the charity marking its 60th anniversary, but it was also, it wasn't so much a celebration, Holly. To be truthful, it was really a platform to showcase carers' stories and how they've really struggled to get support, exactly what Wayne has described there to you. And I think that yesterday's event, we had two carers who spoke about their day-to-day struggles in getting support. And that was support was around their mental health. So we know that one in four carers in Northern Ireland are suffering mental ill health. We know 50% feel lonely at least some of the time. We know 43% identify that they need a break. They just can't get a break. And we heard yesterday from one of the carers, he said she got 3 nights sleep in 6 years. It is absolutely shocking. And we know that that one in three carers have put off getting health treatment for themselves because they just can't get out of the house to go to that appointment, or they just don't have the energy. They're just exhausted, and putting themselves first is just, they just don't have the energy to do it. So what I will say on a practical level, because it's really important that we focus on what can be done. Mm-hmm. So in relation to what can be done within this mandate, because we know that the Northern Ireland Assembly mandate expires in 2 years' time, and within that we have a very limited window, but there are opportunities to put carers front and centre, and that's within the forthcoming programme for government, because that'll dictate how the Northern Ireland Executive and all of the civil service infrastructure that's built all around it, how it does its work, what are the priorities, do we prioritise carers who bring 5.8 billion to the economy through the unpaid carers that they provide, and that translates into £15 million per day. So if they withdrew their care, I don't think the health service would be able to cope, and I think everybody knows that.
Yes, this is the thing. Everyone, we talk about it all the time, you know, the impact, the role that carers in Northern Ireland play. They are essentially propping up what is a struggling NHS right now. If they weren't there, if they weren't doing the work they did, what would happen?
Well, exactly. And I think that social care and social care reform is really creeping up the agenda. And at Carers NI, we're really, really pleased to see that, because, you know, you can have winter pressures, you can have, you know, cyclical kind of spikes in the diary, but social care is something that's been needed reform across the UK on a massive level for many, many years. And it's one of those sort of, you know, hard nettles that you don't want to grasp. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those really tricky things that it probably needs a significant amount of investment. But I think the moment has come where we realise that we have to do this. And I think within various kind of departments within the Northern Ireland Executive, including the Department for Health and Communities and the Executive, they understand the value of actually trying to demonstrate how they support carers. And that could be through the new Good Jobs Bill that's coming out shortly. It could be within the fuel poverty strategy and the consultation that's live at the moment. And it also, we hope that carers will feature really strongly within the forthcoming anti-poverty strategy, because we know that carers, because they're so exhausted, some can't work. They're just too tired. Or perhaps they might
don't have
to drop
time.
Their hours.
They don't have time. They're full-time carers.
Exactly. They're round the clock. And then that kind of then relates to the Carers Alliance, and what they get is pennies, absolutely pennies to the hour for what they do. And then, you know, from a Carers NI point of view, we realise that poverty is one of the biggest things affecting carers. So we've asked the Communities Minister, Gordon Lyons, would he give carers a special one-off payment? And that would come twice a year, around £270. And that would just help carers on a twice yearly basis, just to get that little bit of extra money in their pocket. But we know it would really, really help them.
What would you make of that, Wayne? You know, just a bi-monthly or bi-annual payment, £270. What support would you want? If you could put it to the executive now, what would change your life for the better?
What would change my life for the better would basically ease my mind more so than anything, is to find out what happens to my son when I leave this planet. Mm-hmm. Who is going to guide him? Who is going to protect him? And what facilities is there for parents like me when we leave? Who is going to take care of our children in a safe environment? Because mm-hmm. at the minute, we don't have that compared to other places. We have nothing to keep our children safe when we leave this earth. Nothing. There's no respite, no places where they can go and stay permanently. There's nothing for that. That is my biggest fear.
And can I say that, I mean, the fact that even now, the thing that I ask you, anything that you need to support you, and you're still thinking of your son and what happens when you are no longer there to look after him. And Anya, I imagine that is something that you hear time and time again.
Absolutely. And I think Wayne's points are so poignant. And funny, we heard actually the same comment made yesterday. What happens to my child whenever I'm gone? And at the moment, it doesn't feel like there's facilities or supports in place to actually enable that transition. What I will say is that I know that the Health Minister, Mike Nesbitt, he pledged £13 million over the next few years to support the reinstatement of respite breaks for people like Wayne, so that you can get a break. The difficulty, I suppose, from what we're hearing locally on the ground from carers, is that the money that the minister has put to one side, I think £2 million in the short term anyway, I'm not sure if that's translating on the ground. And it would be good, actually, if we could get a sense of how that is being rolled out across the trusts, because we understand that it isn't being implemented at pace because there's a workforce issue. So I think that some of these intentions are really well-meaning and we really appreciate them, but sometimes they're quite difficult to translate. Yeah. And then for carers on the ground, that leaves them in limbo land because there's nothing there to support them. You know, they might get a respite break maybe one or two nights, maybe twice a year, maybe once a year. We know carers that haven't ever had access to respite.
Never had one in my life.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so unequal, Holly. I think that's probably one of the biggest things we have across Northern Ireland's five trust system, is that there is a postcode lottery of what services are available for you, for example, in the Northern Trust versus the Belfast Trust versus west of the Ban and the Western Trust. We just don't have that uniformity at all.
See, the problem is, I think, in my honest opinion, is no, Northern Ireland as a whole is an unrest to go. It can't be saved. The failure of government in the past 10 years, they can never fix Northern Ireland. The deficit is far, far too big. To me, they have no money to do anything, and no matter even when they get money, they can't manage money. And they don't care. I wouldn't say they don't care. They're just so bad at playing bad politics, but they never pay the price. And they never, there's not an MLA in this country has ever paid the price for their failures. None of them have. And I don't care what they say. Even when they walk out, they still get their money for about 2 years. And I don't care what they do on the ground. As a society of government in Northern Ireland, we have been failed, and I don't care what size. Because there's one thing about autism, disability and elderly, they don't take sides of religion, colour or anything. These are things that happen on a daily basis. When you even go into the health service, they don't care what you are. Their job as a professional person
is to try to get you in and out and well. And that's the problem. We have a failure of a government in this country, and they're never held accountable.
Well, perhaps they're listening right now. Wayne, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us, and I'm sure there are many others who can relate. And do let us know, 03030 8055 55. Thank you to Áine McGee from Carers NI. And if you have been affected by any of the issues that we've discussed and explored here, you can visit the BBC Action Line for advice and support at bbc.co.uk/actionline. It's just approaching 10 o'clock. We'll be bringing you the latest from the Met Office. A red warning has now been issued in Northern Ireland. More on that after 10. Breaking news here that the Met Office has now issued a red wind warning, so that could cause a danger to life for all of Northern Ireland for tomorrow. The warning was issued in just the last few minutes as Storm Éowyn approaches from the Atlantic. Let's bring back BBC NI weather presenter Barra Best. Hello again.
How are you doing?
Predicted almost, wasn't it? We sort of almost saw this coming, but this is actually very, very rare.
I mean, so rare, in fact, it's the first red warning that has ever been issued for Northern Ireland since an impact-based system was introduced in 2011. So, yeah, it's the first time. So, therefore, it's also the first time a red warning has also been in place right across the island of Ireland. So, very serious conditions potentially heading our way. The Met Office in this warning is suggesting gusts of 80 to 90 miles an hour fairly widely, even inland. Normally, our strongest gusts like that are around the coast. But coastal areas, they are saying, expecting gusts of 100 miles an hour around exposed areas. What they are also advising in their warning is to avoid travelling by roads. It's not safe to do so. Don't risk injuries to others or your property if you have things that are that you can tie down outside. We've all seen pictures in recent years, Holly, of somebody getting a free trampoline because it's flown from somebody's house four doors up the street. Mm-hmm. So things like that you might want to take in. They could cause damage. Anything else you can do to protect yourself in this potentially very serious situation. So yes, just to reemphasize, the first time we've had a red warning since this impact system was introduced in 2011.
Should we expect, we were chatting earlier on about in the Republic, things like school closures, public transport stopping. Is that likely to happen here? Should it happen here?
Well, I mean, given that the Met Office are advising people not to travel and to stay at home if you can, I can't imagine schools risking the chance of being open. So I would imagine they will do. Businesses probably sending people, telling people to work from home if they can. So I would imagine it's going to be a similar situation to the Republic where people are being advised to stay home if you can.
And the advice as well, if you do have to travel, is there any advice from the Met Office that people can do, you know, to keep themselves safe?
Well, I think it's, you know, there's no specific advice from them to tell us that. But, you know, it's probably on a need-by-need basis. Perhaps people have to go out for some emergencies, for example, maybe to pick up medicines, for example. So it's going to be one of those ones where you'll just need to keep yourself as safe as possible. You know, we're expecting large waves around the coast if you're living along the coastal roads. It's very easy to be swept into the sea by these large waves. Fallen trees on the road. So you're not going to be one to walk out in forest parks, for example, or drive onto tree-lined routes, for example. And on top of that, you know, we're looking at things like power being cut. Storm Dara took out power to about 100,000 homes across Northern Ireland, several hundred thousand in the Republic. I would imagine that would happen again, if not on a much larger scale. That would also bring down coverage of mobile phones. So if there is an emergency, you might be stuck. Damage to buildings. If you had ferries booked tomorrow, flights booked as well, I would be checking with what's happening with them, because I can't imagine many of them will be travelling.
Yeah, and just for people, so they're fully aware of when this starts, when this ends, do we have that sort of detail at this point?
Yeah, so from midnight tonight, a yellow warning for wind comes into place. That's right across Northern Ireland from midnight tonight until midnight tomorrow night. That upgrades to amber from 6
a.m. and then it goes red, and that red is from 7 a.m. tomorrow until 2 p.m. tomorrow, so it coincides with the early morning commute. So I can't imagine the early morning commute is going to be busy tomorrow. So that's when the strongest winds are expected. After 2 o'clock, it remains amber until I think 6 o'clock tomorrow evening, and then downgrades to yellow. One thing maybe it's worth pointing out too, Holly, is potential damage and disruption to power, for example, could be hampered because we're going to get a bit of a lull on Saturday, but we have another system heading our way on Sunday, bringing some very strong winds and also rain. So if anyone is cut off, perhaps in more remote areas, they could face, you know, several days of disruption like they did with Storm Dara. So it's something to bear in mind.
That's a really good point, because how does this compare to Storm Dara? Because there, obviously, as you mentioned, there were so many people who were cut off in some occasions for days. Is this going to be worse?
Well, certainly the forecast models are suggesting it's going to be worse. Those winds we had, we didn't have winds like it, especially even inland during Storm Dara. So we're more used to those exposed coastal areas getting those extreme winds. This time it's going to come inland as well. So yes, very, very serious. You know, our strongest wind recorded in Northern Ireland, I think, was on 12th of January 1974. So almost, what's that? What's the maths on that? 41 years ago, of 124 miles an hour in Kilkeel in County Down. And this warning is for around 100 miles an hour in exposed areas. We could see perhaps stronger than that. We won't know until the end of the day tomorrow. So, yeah, much stronger than Dara.
And is it just wind that we're talking about here as well? Because I'm just quickly, and I appreciate I'm putting you on the spot, and this is an ever-changing situation here, by the way. So the whole of the country now across the UK is covered by at least one yellow weather warning. Northern Ireland, is it fair to say they're getting the worst of it?
Well, at the moment, yeah, it's only a red warning for Northern Ireland. Amber warnings, though, are already also issued in Northern Wales, Northern England, into Southern Scotland as well, and across areas in Scotland and the Pennines, for example. Snow is also a high risk there. We are expecting some snow on the leading edge of some rain tonight. It's probably not going to be too problematic. It should clear fairly quickly, but also on top of that, rain as well. But it's the wind that's going to have the highest impact for us.
Yeah, because even again, I don't want to, you know, this is not applicable to Northern Ireland currently, but even some forecasters talking about tornadoes in England. I mean, is that likely?
Not that I've seen at the minute, but I suppose it can't be ruled out. I haven't read anything for us, certainly, with regards to the tornadoes. But I dare say if you're caught outdoors with those winds of 100 miles an hour around the coast, it'll probably feel like it.
Yeah, and just again, I'm putting you very much on the spot here. And again, this is a very sort of rapidly changing situation. Some forecasters saying that any tornado could be long track. The main tornado risk seems to evolve along and south of a Bristol-London line. So again, this doesn't affect Northern Ireland. But the idea that we are talking here in 2025, talking about these severe weather systems, I mean, this isn't normal, I suppose. I think when we talk about weather and discuss meteorology, there's not really anything that we could describe as normal anymore.
Well, that's it. And it's all to do, you know, with climate change. And we have been warned for years that, you know, we've always had storms in winter. It's a point that's often made to social media to me. Well, what's the point in naming these? We've always had them. But one of the things with climate change is that, you know, we can still expect these storms, but at times they'll become more extreme, and more extreme than what we have had in previous years. Not only with wind, but also with rain events. Instead of getting a large amount of rain over the space of a month, we are now seeing times where we get a month's rain just falling in a few days. So these are all the extremes that we need to keep watching out for, and climate change is only a forecast to make those situations more common, if not worse.
Say people will be very concerned right now, and I appreciate if you do want to get the latest information, just head over to the BBC News website and the weather site as well. Barra, I appreciate you will be posting on social media, keeping people up to date as well, I imagine.
Yes, absolutely. We have the updates right through today, and as you mentioned, across all of the BBC. So stay tuned, we'll keep you updated.
Brilliant. Barabet, thank you very much for your advice on help and that. As I say, this may have a knock-on effect on what happens in terms of school closures, in terms of travel, in terms of public transport, that sort of thing. Now, let's see. The time is 14 minutes past 10. Translink have been given the green light to resume work to dismantle the Boyne Bridge in Belfast. Our communities correspondent Mark Simpson has more on this. Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Holly.
How's the weather there?
Well, yes, you say that the Boyne Bridge work can resume. I don't think much work is going to be done tomorrow.
No.
But TransLink have just told us, and as we know, the Nolan Show has been covering this story and broke the news last week that work had been put on hold. The news this morning is that after more than a month of work not being allowed to take place, it can resume. But you're right, Holly, with the health warning that I don't think much work will be done in the next 36 hours.
But what do we know?
What we know is that there was a planning problem, and the Department for Infrastructure told TransLink, they didn't tell us, our team behind the scenes. Can I say our team, Holly?
I think Steve, we can. Did we get a nod from everybody there behind the glass? Yeah. It's our team. They're on loan.
Our team, even us as the two super subs, our team behind the scenes discovered that work had stopped. I think anybody going past the bridge there near Grand Central Station would have noticed that the noise suddenly stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Our team got onto it, found out that work had stopped in the middle of December. There'd been a planning issue. We spoke to Chris Conway on the programme on Friday. He said he thought the issue would be sorted. He couldn't give us a timescale. And hey presto, we found out this morning that they have now finally been given the green light to resume work as soon as is possible.
So I'm assuming then that planning issue has been resolved.
Yes, they say, to use the jargon from the DFI, the Department for Infrastructure, the planning conditions have all been discharged. And I think at least one of our listeners will be very, very disappointed. John Anderson, who has been campaigning to keep the bridge. He came into the studio last week with me, Holly. He feels this very passionately. And he had hoped that maybe this break in work would allow the department, allow TransLink to think again and maybe not get rid of the bridge. But it's full steam ahead, if you pardon the transport pun.
Yeah, have you had any reaction as of yet from those who had hopes that this would have meant the end?
No, Holly, as soon as I found out the news, I spoke to our production team and came straight on to the Nolan Show. I'll get some reaction now.
I would imagine so. Let's have a look now. We've got some questions here for you that we have put to the executive office. I know a lot of you are very concerned about Storm Eowyn. It has been upgraded to a red wind warning now for Friday. That kicks in as of midnight tonight. So we are asking the question if officials are meeting to coordinate a response to Storm Eowyn. If this is a cross-departmental response, for example, a Department of Education on schools, public transport, that sort of thing, and what contingency plans are being put in place to protect the public. Okay, because I appreciate, again, a lot of you are concerned about this and they're not quite sure what is supposed to happen tomorrow. So how does the TEO and the executive plan to communicate with the public? Is there likely to be a press conference today with the First and Deputy Ministers and or Executive Ministers being planned, for example? These are the questions that we are asking. We're hoping to bring you some answers before 10 o'clock today. For now, though, if you are worried, there is a lot of advice available on the BBC News and the Met Office website. So we are expecting, because it is a red warning, flying debris resulting in danger to life, large waves, beach material being thrown onto coastal roads, seafronts and homes, dangerous driving conditions, fallen trees on the roads, that is expected. And as Barra mentioned earlier on, likely to be power cuts affecting services and also mobile phone coverage as well. So that could mean damage to buildings and homes. All of these are possibilities in a red weather warning. It's the first time that it's been introduced in Northern Ireland. It's the first time the whole of the island of Ireland has had a red weather warning. The advice really is if you can stay at home and also to protect your property as much as you can from any damage and obviously from your injury for yourselves. Check for any loose items. Barra mentioned trampolines. That could be tables, chairs, anything that you've got loose outside. make sure that they are secured. A bin, plant pots, anything like that. And it's not because we're concerned about the bin or the plant pot. They could blow in through windows. They can cause all sorts of damage. So please, please have a look around and be careful. If you do need to travel, and the advice that we are getting is avoid any journeys if you can. We do know that windy weather can cause delays, can make driving conditions really very, very dangerous. So the advice is plan your route, check for road closures, check for delays, listen out for travel updates on BBC Ulster, BBC Four, wherever you get your travel updates from. If you don't have essentials in your car, pack for the worst, OK? And again, this, the advice is to stay at home if you can, but if you must drive, pack some extra food, some warm clothing, blanket, torch, that sort of thing, and make sure that your car is fully charged. As I say, all that advice is on the Met Office website as well. Let's speak now to Alex Deakin, who's Senior Presenter and Meteorologist at the UK Met Office. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning.
Now, Alex, it seems, and I'm concerned about scaring people, but this is quite a scary situation.
Yeah, we don't issue red warnings lightly. We know, you know, the serious impact that they have. We've been tracking this storm for a number of days, even before it formed. But now it's formed. You know, we can see it out in the Atlantic, and it's only going to intensify as it approaches over the next, well, 12 to 16 hours, that kind of thing. And it does look a really lively storm, a really nasty storm. These gusts of wind are going to cause some problems, bringing threats to life. So, yeah, people should really pay attention to this warning.
I was given some advice there on what people can do right now. What preparation can people put in place? I mean, this is likely to start, I think, from first thing tomorrow morning in Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really tomorrow morning's rush hour where we're going to feel the brunt of it, particularly across the west, but right across Northern Ireland, we're going to see significant winds and damaging winds. I mean, I think you covered it pretty much all there. You know, if there's anything outside that you can, you know, that is likely to be blown away by these very strong winds, unusually strong winds, you know, 80, 90 mile an hour winds, potentially even stronger than that in exposed areas. So if you've got anything outside that you think could be damaged or could be moving around, then yeah, just make sure you put it safe. Get it all tidied away now while you can. And it's not great out there this morning with wet and windy weather, but it's a lot calmer than it will be tomorrow. So, yeah, if you can do some preparation, as you said, please think about any journeys you need tomorrow. Really, really don't make them unless you absolutely have to, because there will be disruption to public transport and on the roads. So, yeah, just really think about that. Plan your day. Make sure you know where you're going to be tomorrow, what your plans are as this storm hits.
Again, because we haven't experienced a red weather warning here before, people might not be aware of what sort of starts, as in the effect that this has on public transport. Is it likely that that will be cancelled, closure of schools? What's the advice within a red weather warning?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of issue the warning. It's then up to individual companies. Okay. Obviously, we work closely with you know, the transport network and with public services. So they'll be making decisions based on that. But that is what often happens. It can happen in amber. It depends on the different situation, depends on the resilience. But certainly with a red warning, yeah, they are rare. We don't issue them lightly. And it does mean a significant danger to life. So it's because we're more certain now. You know, even when we issued the yellow warning on Tuesday, when we named the storm, there was always the very high, there was always the chance that, that there was going to be significant issues, which is why we've kind of firmed up yesterday when it looked more certain, and now it looks nailed on. That's why we've gone red. So it's always been throughout this week that the chances of high impact is just what those chances are. So now we're pretty certain that these you know, damaging, dangerous gusts are going to happen. Yeah, there will be issues. As I say, we work with local authorities. We work with, and it's up to them to make the individual decisions about schools. But definitely stay tuned, stay up to date, because there will be updates coming out through the day, no doubt.
And Alex, is that what it comes down to then? Just certainty within the Met Office? We had this strange situation then just less than an hour ago where Met Erin obviously had put out the red warning and Northern Ireland was just sort of standing alone as if it had a completely different weather system from the rest of Ireland. But that obviously now means there's a red weather warning across the whole of the island of Ireland. Why the difference there? What's the trigger? What kind of prompts you to make a red weather warning?
Yeah, it's a different way that the warnings work across Met Erin and across the UK Met Office. So it's just, you know, there's a difference in the way that we issue warnings and the timing of those kind of things. But yeah, for us, it's about certainty as well as impact. Met Aaron just issued their warnings based on what they think the winds are going to be and whether they're going to trigger a certain value. So for the Met Office, we have a slightly different system. It's more of a matrix where we need that certainty before we issue a red warning. And that certainty is coming to line with the latest updates. The computer models are constantly being updated. So that certainty is now coming to line. That's why we've gone red this morning. But, you know, we were already amber. Amber's pretty serious. And we were, you know, in that serious, as I said, we were in that serious end of the amber category as well, because there was always the potential for these warnings to be upgraded, which is how the matrix works.
It does feel like we've had a bit of a battering, I think is the only way to describe it, with the last couple of storms. And in terms of giving us a bit of context in how this might compare to Storm Dara, for example.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a little further north, this storm, compared to Storm Dara. Storm Dara was a little further south and actually went, the centre of the storm went closer to Northern Ireland. This is now because it's actually a little further north. The strongest winds with these storm systems are on the southern and western flanks, the southwestern quadrant, if you like. If you think of a clock between like 6 and 9, that quadrant, compared to when the, if you see the low pressure as the circle, as the centre of the clock, that's the quadrant where the strongest winds are. So with the storm being a little further north and actually tracking just to the northwest of the of Northern Ireland, we here are going to see the strongest winds. So it all depends on subtle shifts in position as to where exactly sees the strongest winds. It has been a stormy few months, as you say, with Storm Bert and Storm Dara. There's always a slight difference, you know, a subtle shift in the jet stream. That's what drives these storms, can mean the difference between a couple of hundred miles either way, which makes a huge difference about whether you see 50 mile an hour winds, which generally don't cause too many issues, and these 80, 90 mile an hour winds, which do.
And it's always tricky to use any sort of sensationalist language here, but certainly meteorologists, or some anyway, in the Republic of Ireland are suggesting this could be the worst storm that has hit Ireland. What are your predictions? What's your forecast?
Yeah, it's hard to put into context before these events happen. It really is. And, you know, every storm is different. Every storm is unique. As I say, they're always slightly different in one form where they actually intensify. It's more about, it's all about gradients with meteorology. It's not necessarily about just how low the pressure is. That's an interesting factor, actually, about this, particularly for Northern Ireland. This could be one of the lowest in terms of the depth of the low, how low it gets to hit Northern Ireland in January, certainly. So that's a record that could go. But just the depth of the low doesn't necessarily dictate how strong the winds are. Again, it's about the gradient and how rapidly it's dropping and how strong the gradient is. So there's a number of factors in. Everyone's different. And yeah, it's hard to contextualize before it happens. But as you mentioned at the start, red warnings are very rare. So that kind of puts it into context. That should alert people. You know, we don't name storms off the cuff anyway. So a named storm in itself, named as early as Tuesday for something that's happening Friday, that is pretty unusual. So, you know, all of these signs are pointing to the fact that it's going to be a very rare storm. Once it's happened, you can contextualize it and put the actual numbers into place.
And for those who monitor the weather, and we like to, and people will be closely watching for any kind of changes and that sort of thing. Everyone likes to call themselves an expert. Is it likely to change? You know, because people sort of feel, who are certainly not experts, that there should be some sort of build up to this. That's not the case, is it? That, you know, we'll suddenly gradually get windier and windier. There could be a bit of a lull today and then it all builds up to something tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, the certainty is now, you know, growing and growing and growing. We wouldn't have issued a red unless we were pretty certain. That's the, you know, that's how the matrix system works.
So you're absolutely certain there's unlikely to be a change in this?
Yeah, really. I mean, it could be just 50 miles further north, which would reduce the wind speed. So, you know, you could be, I guess there's possibly a swing there of 5 to 10 miles an hour, but I'd be surprised if it's more than that. It is still a developing system. You know, it's not fully matured yet. It intensified last night quite a bit, but it's got further intensification to go in the next 12 hours. And that will be crucial to determine A, its exact track, and B, its exact depth, and, you know, the exact strength of the winds across Northern Ireland. With this storm, we are going to see gusts of 80 to 90 miles an hour, but whether they occur just offshore, if you see what I mean, you know, it can be in that balance. But either way, we are going to see damaging gusts of wind across Northern Ireland. It's a question of, as I say, now it's a question of maybe 5, perhaps 10 miles an hour either way, but it's nailed on that there will be some disruption, if that helps.
And Alex, just for those who want to get the latest information on this, and I think that's what's so important here, people need to keep up to date with whatever the forecast may be, and obviously, more importantly, perhaps, the advice and what people should do. Yeah. Where should they go to look for that?
Yeah, well, as you highlighted it there earlier, but there's loads and loads of information on the Met Office website. I mean, if you go to the warnings, that's the first place to start. Go to the Met Office warnings website. If you get the Met Office free app, all the warnings are on there as well. And there's loads of, you know, it goes through step by step what we're expecting, and it goes through there what the impact are likely to be. And then there's things like what should I do, top tips for staying safe, and there's how to drive safely. As you mentioned earlier, we're really suggesting people don't drive and stay at home. If they can, but there's stuff about, you know, what to do in this kind of scenario, and for each of the different colours of the warning. So yeah, it's red across the whole of Northern Ireland, but other parts of the UK obviously have different colours. So those the advice changes depending on the colour. So yeah, the Met Office website or the Met Office app is really the best place to go, and that obviously will be updated as well. We've just issued those red warnings this morning, but we're constantly looking at it as this storm develops further over the next 12 hours.
Alex Deakin, thank you very much. That's Alex, the senior presenter and meteorologist at the UK Met Office. We're back tomorrow from 9. Stay safe out there, folks.
The best show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan.
Yoga is more than just exercise. It's the spiritual practice that millions swear by. And in 2017, Miranda, a university tutor from London, joins a yoga school that promises profound transformation.
It felt a really safe and welcoming space. After the yoga classes, I felt amazing.
But soon, that calm, welcoming atmosphere leads to something far darker, a journey that leads to allegations of grooming, trafficking and exploitation across international borders.
I don't have my passport, I don't have my phone, I don't have my bank cards, I have nothing.
The passport being taken, the being in a house and not feeling like they can leave.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are unveiled and hidden realities are exposed. In this new series, we're confronting the dark side of the wellness industry, where the hope of a spiritual breakthrough gives way to disturbing accusations.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
And it's like this secret that's there. I wanted to believe that, you know, that whatever they were doing, even if it seemed gross to me, was for some spiritual reason that I couldn't yet understand.
Revealing the hidden secrets of a global yoga network.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this and to put my reputation and everything else on the line. I want truth and justice. And for other people to not be hurt. For things to be different in the future.
To bring it into the light and almost alchemize some of that evil stuff that went on and take back the power.
World of Secrets, Season 6, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.